Hey, fellow Freedom fans, we're back here on the Faith and Freedom Show, and you can check out my live video stream. When I grow up, someday I'll learn to actually look at the camera. That's what I'll do. Maybe I'm shy. I don't know, but here I am, and the number here is 888-850-1872. I've been a little bit heady. Sometimes I'm not. But today, I kind of go in waves. I told my wife, I told her, I'm not enjoying my show today so much because I'm having to be educational, and I would rather sit in a classroom and go precept by precept, one little morsel at a time. And you can't really do that on radio. What I'd like to do, sometime next year, maybe I'll talk to a homeschool group and see if I can get them in on a government class where once a week I actually do a live government class out of one of their, one of the popular books that are used with a bunch of homeschoolers. In fact, it's a Florida school that produces the textbook, and that would be kind of good. I'm thinking about that, just doing one day a week where I do a government class where they go do their assignment for the textbook, and then we go to the advanced discussion and do it on the air. In fact, we could tell you ahead of time what it is that they're studying, and then once a week we could have a Faith and Freedom Friday. It'd probably be on a Thursday because I know there's a group that does a cooperative study where they all get together and share their work and things like that and just have a good time and get held accountable to a very high standard, much higher than you might get in any public school and possibly even most private schools. Something to think about. When I went away on the break, I was talking about the habeas corpus. Habeas corpus. Does anybody know what habeas corpus is? It's in the U.S. Constitution. And it basically is a Latin term that says, give us the body. Show us the body. It comes back from, it is a, the Magna Carta thing, and where Prince John is going to hide somebody off in the Tower of London or something like that. And they're a political prisoner. Nobody knows why they're there. Nobody knows the charges. I've read when I was doing some review in history on torture, I remember reading a writing on the memoirs of Sir Edward Coke, and he was talking about a preacher who was talking prepared a sermon that he never delivered to address the current king's misbehaviors. And so what happened is the king heard about this preacher, and he sent in his guys to go, you know, basically storm the guy's house, kick things over, and search things. They found a sermon that he was preparing addressing misbehaviors of the king, not necessarily supposedly desiring to be seditious to stir up trouble against him, but just like John the Baptist said that Herod's behavior was unlawful with regard to his adultery and sort of incest kind of thing. So he was doing the same thing. And what happened is the king came against this guy for political reasons and charged him with treason. Well, they had four-pronged tests for treason. He didn't meet any of them. But he was being kept in prison. Now watch this. To get him to confess, see if they could get him to confess, they don't need any evidence. So what they would do to get him confess is they would torture him. In specific, one of the things that they used was waterboarding. Now, you can find out if you do a little homework on waterboarding recently, everybody gives in on waterboarding. Everybody. They just can't take it. So, I mean, one guy lasted 8 minutes or something like that instead of 40 seconds. But people give in. Well, this guy never even gave in to waterboarding and other tortures, and he would not concede that he had done anything seditious, but he was merely holding the king's specific behavior, accountable to the word of God, and that was it. He wasn't, and they were saying, well, the last final charge, the last prong of this test for treason would be that trying to make it so the military would not have confidence in the king. In other words, you know, the commander in chief, making it so those people you were commander in chief over wouldn't have confidence in you. And they couldn't prove any of that. And he ended up dying in prison nonetheless. But that goes back to a thing where if somebody's, you know, a political prisoner, if we let you out, you're going to tell a sermon that's going to discourage the soldiers. And so we've got to keep you locked up in jail in spite of the fact that you've not violated any laws. That's kind of what the military commissions thing is doing. You've got somebody who's not like a prisoner of war where he's working for some government who is a belligerent under the law of nations fighting us. And after the war, if he realizes, okay, we lost, we can be friends now. These guys are attacking Americans just because that's what they do. If they're not attacking Americans, you know what they're going to be doing? Attacking somebody else back in their neighborhood. They're just warring. That's what they do. Some cases they were just hired, collected a little money to attack Americans. And if you put them back in their neighborhood, they may attack Americans. They may attack the Taliban. They may attack, you know, their next door neighbor if you give them a dime. It just could be that they're corrupt, vicious, and degenerate. So with regard to some of these guys in Guantanamo, I think there's people like that. They really don't know what to do with because, you know, it's just their situation. They don't really care. It's kind of like, well, we caught you. If you were a prisoner of war, we'd send you home. Okay, even though you were shooting at us, we'd send you home if you're a prisoner of war under the law of nations. But you're not. You're just a thug. What do we do with a thug? You know, safety of society, the globe, I mean, who knows? Just what kind of carbon footprints do thugs have? I don't know. So with regard to habeas corpus, and I've got a caller, but I'm going to have him hold just for a second, is what we're going to do. Oh, they said they didn't want to hold. So one of the things about habeas corpus is when somebody's held like that, it's this thing where you can have somebody come with a petition called a writ of habeas corpus. It could be the person themselves that files a writ of habeas corpus, or it could be just some interested party who's got a cause for concern that somebody's rights are violated. You can take in this writ of habeas corpus to a court, and the court gives this writ to the military officer and it says, produce the body. Now, people, as far as I understand habeas corpus, it doesn't mean they're guaranteed to get a civil judicial proceeding. It doesn't mean that they're out of the jurisdiction of this executive agency. It just means that somebody with judicial, non-passioned, non-military view who also has a concern for their own society's safety might scrutinize what's going on and say, hey, show us that you actually have a cause to keep them. Now, at that point, I would think that the judge under habeas corpus is going to give great discretion to the military if they've actually got something that would indicate that the person literally has a reason during a certain period of time even to not be subject to any civil trial. It for the safety of the nation or whoever. It very well may be that there's some cause to hold them if they were taken especially under a military power. You know, in a legitimate conflict that would be not a civil conflict, but a military conflict. That when they bring it to the court, they say, oh, okay, you do have information that would justify you keeping this guy who you very well may not be able to try under civil proceedings, but is nevertheless, under these circumstances, under your discretion in this military situation, a danger. So having habeas corpus isn't a foregone conclusion that they're going to be submitted to a court with evidence or procedural stuff. I might be wrong on that, but as I'm doing my homework, I'm finding habeas corpus isn't necessarily a bad thing. Now, what happened with Lincoln was he suspended habeas corpus by himself. You can't do that. You can't do it. It's in the Constitution, Article 1. In Section 9, it says that Congress, I'm going to try to go to that, that Congress can suspend habeas corpus during times of emergency, times of war, whatever it might be, and for a certain amount of time. Let's see if I can find that, this habeas corpus thing. Oh, the privilege, not the immunity, but the privilege, see, privileges are rights. The privilege of writ of habeas corpus shall not be suspended unless when in cases of rebellion or invasion, the public safety may require it. So it's in the case of defense. So if somebody is off in another country, this Afghanistan thing is an interesting discussion over this power, but the privilege of habeas corpus shall not be suspended unless when in cases rebellion or invasion of public safety may require it. You will say, well, the president should be able to do that. No, that would have been in Article 2 of the Constitution with regard to talking about the powers of the president. But it's not. It's in Article 1, Section 9. In fact, Taney, speaking of that ill-famed Supreme Court Justice Taney, as he mentioned that, yes, this was in Article 1, Section 9. It's something that Congress controls. Now, I say if Lincoln says, well, I've got a reason to do it, and they'll approve it later. I need to do it in emergency. No, that's just you. No, you're exceeding the authority that's been given you. There is no right reason for doing the wrong thing. Was it that important? How fast? Think about it. If you take somebody into jail, because it didn't say that you can't go capture somebody that you think is a danger and put them in the Tower of London. It just means that if they file for a writ of habeas corpus or their neighbor does, well, you have to honor it. And you know what? You have to just trust that there's accountability set up with this Constitution that somebody else, especially a judge, with his own reason can see, oh, that was not an unreasonable apprehension. You just have to trust. See, our freedom comes in proportion to our faith. Because we don't have faith that there's a divinely ordained order that we actually see physically in front of us that happens to be a U.S. Constitution in our case. If we don't have enough faith that this can be done lawfully and under appropriate godly authority, then we're going to take things in our own hands because we can get away with it and justify it based on some pragmatic, really short-sighted thought of our own. There was somebody in authority, the guys who put together the Constitution with the ratification by the people in the states, they said this is the way we want it. We want even if somebody goes free, even if somebody endangers somebody else, even if this person can make war against the United States in the interest of everybody's liberty and everybody's safety in all cases, not just this emergency, we don't want the president to have the liberty to, by himself, suspend the writ of habeas corpus. We're going to leave that to Congress. So Lincoln was wrong. He was wrong. And the problem is it sets a bad precedent because now people are going, aha, look at Lincoln, the great guy. Look what he did, so we'll do it here too. Our freedom comes in proportion to our faith. And that's an indicator. And if you read his second inaugural address, which you can find at the Lincoln Memorial in Washington, D.C., you'll see that Lincoln did have a perspective of divine retribution. And he did have a perspective that both sides, praying to the same creator, are looking for his blessing. But nevertheless, it sort of alludes to the whole situation they were in with regard to the Civil War was because of their misdeeds as a people in total. And so he did have an understanding of what was right, what was wrong, and divine retribution and all those things. But I say, if the Constitution says that you have to have the ability to have a writ of habeas corpus, you have to be able to have that, unless Congress suspends it, and then Congress, you see, is influenced by the people. Congress, I mean, think about it. They could suspend it indefinitely. But if the people themselves who are accountable to God for the behavior of their magistrate servant, if those people say, wait a minute, it's gone too far, there's now a wrong occurring, then the people have the responsibility to get their Congress, to put people in Congress that'll fix the problem and lift the suspension of habeas corpus at the right time. So there's an order, there's an authority structure, there's an accountability that the president is not supposed to be a law unto himself. Very, 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 very dangerous, very, very wrong, very, very evil when especially the president acts extra constitutionally. And we're coming back and we're going to talk about some of Taney's opinions on whether or not what's the role of the president. Is he supposed to listen to Congress and the Supreme Court and do what they say? Or is he accountable to make decisions based on his understanding of the Constitution? That's the tricky question. We're going to come back, check out our website, faithfreedoms.org. I'll probably tell you about the breaking news story that may be coming that somebody mentioned earlier.